And I appreciate the sermonette. It kind of leads right into the message of the sermon today. But how many of us, probably all of us, have said in the last year something about ourselves where we said, well, that wasn't very wise. Why did I do that? Why did I say that? Well, that I didn't think that through. And sometimes, unfortunately, we all look back on things that are even more serious than that, in that I wish I could go back and change that. I sure wish I could go back and change that decision, or could have thought ahead, or would have had a little more wisdom about making this decision because it had a major impact on my life. We all say, well, that was dumb. I wish I wouldn't have done that. And sometimes, boy, if I could change that, because it can be very serious. Now, we all do this to one degree or another because none of us can foresee what will always result. None of us have perfect vision into the future, have perfect wisdom and forethought as to exactly how something's going to turn out. None of us are able to do that. So we often look back and say, well, I wish I could change that. Well, the Bible, of course, speaks about many vital and important keys to our life. You might say it talks about faith. How important is faith to all of us? Well, vital. The just shall live by faith. But how about patience? Well, we need patience. You're saved by your patience, the Bible. Well, how about hope? You got to have hope. We won't make it to the kingdom of God if we don't have hope. Bible also says you're saved by hope. Courage. How important is courage? And on, the various virtues that a Christian must have. And if we were to list, well, what do you think of the top five? Well, some of those would come to mind. Well, the Bible also speaks about the important aspect of wisdom, using wisdom in the things that we do, the decisions that we make, the judgments that we make. A Christian is not only have courage, should have some wisdom, you got to have hope. We should have a degree of wisdom about us in what we do, how we live our life. Now, what is wisdom? Well, it's not all that mysterious. Now, here's some children that can tell us what wisdom is. Here's Patrick, age 10. What is wisdom? Patrick, age 10, says, never trust a dog to watch your food. That's wisdom. Never leave and say, watch my plate, you know, to your dog. Not very wise. Michael, age 14, when your dad is mad and asks you, do I look stupid? Don't answer. That's wisdom. John, age 13, never tell your mom her diet's not working. Very unwise. You see, this is giving us insight into what are we talking about, wisdom. Another child, age 9, said, never hold a dustbuster and a cat at the same time. Bad idea. And finally, very insightful, Naomi, age 15, if you want a kitten, start out asking for a pony. I want a pony. No, we're not getting a pony. I want a pony. No, you're not getting a pony. Well, can I at least have a kitten? Oh, all right, you can have the kitten. You see, if you start out asking for the pony, you might get it. But if you say, can I have a kitten? No, we're not having any kittens. So start out going for the horse or the pony, and you might work out for you. Here's an individual that worked for NASA. He said, a colleague of mine at NASA, we're still trying to decide what is wisdom, a colleague of mine at NASA was assigned to prepare a presentation on lessons learned from our bad experiences with the Hubble Space Telescope. Remember early on, they had a real problem with the focus mechanism. They had to go up and had to repair it. It was a major event. So he was to prepare a presentation on lesson learned from our bad experiences with the Hubble Space Telescope. On his chart at the briefing, he had lesson number one of what we learned in naming your mission, never use a word that rhymes with trouble. Very unwise. And finally, a minister gave an unusual sermon one day using a peanut to make several important points about the wisdom of God in nature. One of the members greeted the pastor at the door and said, very interesting, pastor. I never expected to learn so much from a nut. So, not a very wise way of putting that. Now, as far as the dictionary definition, what is wisdom? The ability to discern or judge what is right, what is true, or lasting. It's insight. Well, we might also say common sense, good judgment. You make common sense decisions. Ever hear or talk or hear somebody mention about somebody? They have no common sense. Common sense would tell you, well, that just means wisdom, good judgment, insight. That's what wisdom is. Now, there's some differences here. Wisdom is different from knowledge. Now, knowledge would be just facts. Give me the facts, the basic details. And that would be defined as information. You have the facts, that's a bunch of information, which is good and fine. What do you do with information? You commit it to memory. Okay, I've memorized the facts. I know the state capitals of all 50 states. And if you know a lot of facts and information, then you can be a scholar. You know a lot of information. You can be a scholar. Now, knowledge is different from understanding. Understanding is not only facts, but it's what do the facts mean? It's meaning. And so you not only know knowledge or information, but you understand the principles. That is not just something you commit to memory. You reason with the meaning and the principles. And so you reason it. You don't just memorize it. And if you're good at that, you can become a teacher. Teach other people the principles, the reason, what this certain things mean. But now you have wisdom. Wisdom is not facts only. It's not the meaning. Wisdom tells you what to do next. Okay, I know the facts. Yeah, I know what that means. What do I do with that? When do I do that? The timing. What to do with it. That's not information or principles. That's an application of it in the right circumstances at the right time. It's not something you commit to memory. It's not even reason. It's action. It's what do you do with this? And you're not then, if you have knowledge, you can be a scholar. If you have understanding, you might be a teacher. But if you have wisdom, you're a prophet or a sage. You're wise. That's the distinction. That's what we're talking about today, wisdom. An example of this would be Proverbs 26, verse 4 and 5. Proverbs 26, verse 4 and 5 seems rather strange when it says, "Answer not, don't answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like unto him." And then the next bit of wisdom is what? In verse 5. "Answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be wise in his own conceit." This is what wisdom is about. Answer not a fool. Did you ever get in a conversation or be involved in something and maybe somebody told you, maybe your wife or your mate, "Why did you say something? Why did you get into that with him? Why didn't you just be quiet?" "Yeah, I know he said this, but did you have to answer?" All that did would get everybody excited, then he got upset, and then you got into it. You shouldn't have said any. Just let it go. Let him go ahead and make those foolish comments. Ever think of a circumstance like that? Sure. And then have you ever been in a situation where later you said, "Oh, I should have said something then. I don't know why I didn't make a statement. I don't know why I didn't comment. I should have called him on that. I should have said something." So this is what this proverb's about, and it's about the wisdom. I should not bother saying, "This is the wrong time, he's a fool, it won't help, he doesn't want to listen, it'll get into an argument." Wisdom tells you, don't say anything. And another time, wisdom would say, "No, call him on that. He's making a statement, people are getting a wrong impression." So it takes wisdom to know that. None of us have that perfectly. That's what we're discussing here this afternoon in this subject. Well, let's take a look at the classic biblical account of wisdom. We're in 1 Kings chapter 3. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 3. Now you recall the account concerning Solomon. And Solomon, of course, in 1 Kings chapter 3, he becomes king. And God says, well, I'll go ahead and I'll allow you to request anything that you like. And so verse 7, we can pick it up. You recall this, though, in 1 Kings chapter 3. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of David, my father. I'm but a little child. I know not how to go out or to come in. I don't know everything that I need to know. I don't feel like I'm up for this job. I don't think I'm qualified to be the king of your people, your nation. Your servant is in the midst of your people, which have chosen a great people, a lot of really smart, a lot of intellectual, a lot of talented people. I can't lead them all. And you've chosen a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. There's so many of them. How am I going to do this? So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this, your so great a people? Give me justice. Help me to render justice. Make judgment. Well, that pleased God very much. And so God granted him that ability to have that wisdom, to make good judgments. So that was very beneficial and very much pleased God. So now we come down to verse 16. Well, then came there two women, and they were or had been harlots. Just take it for what it says. And they come unto the king, and they stood before him. Now, apparently, they're coming with a set of circumstances that maybe had been heard in a lower court, you might say, and nobody could seem to render a judgment. How are you going to know? There's just no way that you can discern, well, who's telling the truth here? So here's the case that the ladies present before him. And the one woman said, now, which woman is this? Is this the woman who was defrauded? Or is this the woman who's trying to pull the wool over the judge's eyes? Which woman is it? Well, there's really no way to know exactly, at least in her coming forward, because it's going to sound like, well, I was cheated, but it could be the one who's also being false and pretending that she's the one. Well, how would you know? Well, you don't really know right off. So the one woman said, well, oh, my lord, king, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. Okay? And it came to pass 3 days later, after I was delivered, that this woman was delivered also, and we were there together, and there was no strangers with us in the house, save we two in the house. So they ran this business, they had this inn, apparently, and people would probably come and stay, and I don't know what all services they provided. Said they were harlots, I don't know. But they said, well, I gave birth to a child, and 3 days later the other lady gives birth. There was nobody there. They're just the two of us. No witnesses. And this woman's child died at night because she must have rolled over on it and suffocated the child. And she got up at midnight and took my son from beside me while your handmaid slept and laid hers in her bosom and laid her dead child next to me. No, when I get up in the morning to give nurse to my child, behold, it's dead. And when I had considered it in the morning, I looked and, well, this isn't my child at all. Now the other woman speaks up and says, oh, no, that's not the way it happened. The living, now notice it says, the living is my son, the dead is your son. And then that one responds and says, no, the dead is your son, the living is my son. And this they spoke before the king. Well, which one's talking? Well, you can't really know automatically. Now, it is somewhat interesting. Now, of course, King Solomon is there, and he's listening, and a judge is going to listen. He's going to take note of the tone of voice, what he's hearing. He watches their face. He watches the body language. He's getting the facts. He's beginning to make a judgment. Now, it's really hard to tell, well, who's telling the truth. Now, the one says, in verse 22, the woman says, no, but the living is mine. The living child's mine, the dead one's yours. Now the other lady responds and says, no, the dead one is yours, the living one is mine. Now that's kind of interesting, because you would kind of think, generally speaking, if you had an argument and says, no, the living one's mine, the dead one's yours. No, the living one's mine, the dead one is yours. But they switch it. One seems to take note of, mine's the living one, yours is the dead one. No, you've got the dead one, I've got the living one. And so maybe there's a clue there as to where the focus is of each of these individuals. So now in verse 24, the king says, somebody get me a sword. I'm going to need a sword here. So they bring him a sword. Well, now the ladies are probably wondering, what's this all about? King said, I think the best thing to do is divide the two children. We'll give one, half to one, half to the other. Now, kings could do that. They were the ultimate authority, and there wasn't anybody going to, you know, some a lawyer, objection, judge, you're not allowed to do that, or couldn't do that. He's the king. Then spoke the woman whose the living child was unto the king. Well, excuse me, I didn't read verse 23, and I want to do that. Then said the king, the one says, this is your son that lives, and your son is dead. And the other says, no, but your son is dead, and my son. So he repeats it exactly the same way. Now, when you're judging a matter, it's good to repeat. So here's what you're telling me. Is this correct? So you repeat the circumstances, which he does. Okay, then he says to bring the sword. And then in verse 26, spoke the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her insides, you know, her emotions and bowels yearned upon her. And she said, oh, my Lord, give her the living child and in no wise slay it. No, don't do that. But the other one says, let it be neither mine nor yours, but let's divide it. Well, now it doesn't take a lot of wisdom at that point to say, well, I think we see what we got going here. The one says, no, don't kill the child. Go ahead, let her have it. The other one says, yeah, kill it. Well, come on. I think that's an indicator here. Then the king answered and said, give her the living child and no way slay it. She is the mother thereof. Well, see, it was not only a matter that, okay, now we can see, but Solomon had the wisdom to know how to draw that out. He had the wisdom to know, what do we need to do to tip the scale and to cause something to be known here? Because apparently the lower courts, they couldn't decide. There's nobody in the house. You're claiming this. It's your child. She says, no, it's mine. Yours is the one. They don't have this DNA testing at that time. I don't think they did. So there's just no way to know. I've got to find a way that's going to cause something to come out. And so apparently Solomon in his wisdom knew that, well, if I do this, I think we're going to get an indicator here. And so once he did, well, then it became pretty obvious. And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. They saw, well, this man has unusual wisdom and is able to get to the matter and get to the truth. And all the ones probably in lower court, you mean you don't just come up to the king with a set of circumstances. Probably somebody before couldn't handle it. So take it to the king. We can't figure this out. So they got the understanding of how God was working with Solomon. And Solomon was able to maneuver in a way that it became obvious by knowing human nature and knowing what might likely be the response to them. The lying mother, you see, didn't really want a child. That wasn't the issue. She was jealous because the other one had one. She wasn't wanting a child as much as she was not wanting the other lady to have a child. That's what was in her heart, because she said, no, kill them, let them both be dead. She didn't want the child. She didn't want the other one to have it. So Solomon was able to bring that out, and that's the wisdom that God granted, this ability. Now, we all realize that whether God's a part of things or not, some wisdom comes with age. Some wisdom does come with age, generally speaking, for pretty much everybody. I'll read to you Job chapter 12, verse 12. It says, with the ancient is wisdom, and in length of days, understanding. Now, we all learn through experience. Everybody does. Everybody has a degree of wisdom as life goes on. Some more than others, of course. Sometimes that wisdom causes us to mellow some. Sometimes maybe it would have to do with children. Sometimes it's the firstborn. Firstborn parents, we're very exacting, and this child's not going to have a little taste of sugar, and they're going to do everything just right, and we're going to train it up. And then sometimes you know, I think we were a little too exacting. This is, this is a human being here. We're not going to rear perfection in all of this. So sometimes wisdom over the years, well, maybe it mellows you some. But it goes the other way, too. Sometimes wisdom helps you to learn not to be fooled, not to be too trusting. Don't be so naive. Be alert. And so you learn through experience to be a little wiser. Not only one side, it's both. We all learn that. In Luke chapter 2, verse 52, it says, and Jesus increased in wisdom. Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Jesus grew in wisdom. He experienced life's experiences. He had a better understanding of life and people and circumstances at age 30 than he did at age 12. That's what the scripture says. He increased in it. Well, naturally, he grew. He had more experiences. He had interaction in life with people. And he grew in that. And he grew in stature. He matured. He grew in wisdom. Of course, God granting him wisdom through the Holy Spirit too. But so there's a growth process that happens with everybody. Well, the story is told of a new bank president. A new bank president who met with his predecessor and said, I'd like you to know what have been, he met with his predecessor, this new bank president, and he asked the man who was leaving, the one he was replacing, I would like to know what have been the keys to your success as bank president. Can you pass on some of that? And the older gentleman looked at him and he replied, young man, I can sum it up in two words, good decisions. Good decisions. That's what the key was. And then the young man responded, well, I thank you immensely for the advice, sir, but how does one come to know which are the good decisions? Okay, it's good. How do you know which are the good decisions? One word, young man, replied the sage, experience. Experience. And the guy says, well, that's good, and I'm glad to hear that, but how does one get experience? Two words, he said, bad decisions. That's how it works. So we all learn things. We all grow in wisdom. Life teaches us things. We're wiser, at 40 than we were at 18, and probably at 65 than we were at 40. That's just the way life is. But what is the source of real wisdom? What is the source of it? 1 Corinthians 3, verse 19. 1 Corinthians 3. Verse 19. We find here it says, for the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. Yeah, there is a lot of craftiness out in the world. There's a lot of scheming. There's a lot of brilliant ideas, a lot of strategies. That's worldly wisdom. The wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, he takes the wise in their own craftiness. Yeah, we think we're so smart. Man thinks he knows the way to peace. Man thinks he knows how to solve everything. That's foolishness to God. And again, the Lord knows the thoughts of the so-called wise. They're vain. They don't work out in the long run. Therefore, let no man glory in men, for all things are yours. There's a wisdom of the world. That isn't the wisdom that we want. Remember Luke 16, the unjust steward? Luke chapter 16. I'll paraphrase that parable for you. You recall that one, the unjust steward? A certain man, a rich man, had a steward. The same had been accused by others. The others come and say, hey, your steward is not doing his job. He's siphoning off funds. He's not handling the responsibility right. So he looks into the matter, and sure enough, he's a crook. He's caught. He was accused of wasting his goods. So the rich man calls him and said unto him, how is it that I hear of you? Give an account of your stewardship. What do you got to say for yourself? You're done here. You're fired. So the guy says, oh, now what am I going to do? I can't go out and do manual labor. I just loathe that idea. I can't go and find another job in the same business because my reputation's shot. Nobody's hiring me to take care of their finances. I don't know what to do. So he calls on some of his friends. He said, well, how much you owe? I owe 100 talents of whatever it might be. You can read it there. What's verse 7? Verse 6, 100 measures of oil. Quick, write down 50. Make it. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. I'll remember you. You're a friend. Well, he asked somebody, how much you owe? I own 100 measures of wheat. Well, write down 80. Make it 80. Make it 80. Thanks a lot. You're a friend. So he did that knowing that when I'm out of work, I can say, go to these people and say, hey, you remember what I did for you, don't you? And so in verse 8, it says the Lord. Now, that doesn't mean Jesus. That means the rich man, the boss. The Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. He'd say, well, I got to hand it to you. As far as taking care of yourself and from this point on, I guess you were pretty crafty. Pretty sly. I'll give you that much. You're still fired, but you're pretty crafty. And then Jesus says, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. You know, when you think about the world, people are pretty sharp. They're pretty shrewd. They know how to work the system. They know how things do things to get it to pay off for them. I don't mean I'm not talking about honesty. I'm talking about being wily, cunning, crafty, creative. How about advertisers? And how about all the schemes and all of the things that are used to gain advantage? We got this fabulous deal, and come down here and you'll get this $10,000 off the retail price of this automobile, and you get there, that one's gone. Let me show you what else we got here on the lot. It's a scheme, and it works. Things are sold. People go to college in marketing and learn skills, how to market things. Not all of it wrong, I'm not saying that, but there's a wisdom, a craftiness. Jesus said people in the world use a lot more sense sometimes than God's people in spiritual matters. Politicians are that way. They know how to give an answer, don't they? They can be pretty sly, scheming, answer, ask a question, put them on the spot. Boy, they can work around, and it's all designed to get a vote. You kind of long for, I wish we had somebody that just said, look, this is how I feel about it. This is the way I see it. I know this is not politically correct, but this is the way it is, folks. And just be honest, maybe a little bit bold. No, we're crafting, and I'm going to lose this constituency and that. And you think, oh, boy, you can hardly get a straightforward, honest position. So the wisdom of this world, the wisdom of the world brings a temporary reward. You're going to get ahead if you're crafty enough. You will get ahead. The unjust steward made out for himself. Pretty wise, pretty cunning. But now godly wisdom, as Jesus goes on to say, in talking about this mammon of unrighteousness, godly wisdom would say, use your funds in a godly, balanced way that bring everlasting reward. Lay up treasures in heaven. God sees. Let God reward. These are eternal benefits. Use your head. Do the wise thing. That's what God tells his people. Be as wise as other people are in worldly matters. Be wise in spiritual things. Let's look at James chapter 3. James 3 talks about this topic. And in verse 13, James 3, 13. Well, who after all is a wise man? In verse 13 of James 3. Who's a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of good conduct his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your heart, glory not and lie not against the truth. If you have these things, this wisdom descends not from above. You're not being given the kind of wisdom that results in strife and things that are not truthful, that isn't coming from God. This wisdom descends not from above. It's earthly. It's sensual. It's of the devil. For where envying and strife is, there's confusion, there's evil, every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above, it's pure, it's peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality and hypocrisy. This is what the fruits of godly wisdom tend to bring. Somebody that has that kind of wisdom tends towards things that are peaceable, calms things down, says the right thing at the right time, doesn't inflame a circumstance and a situation. There's good fruits that come from that. The world's wisdom, it's strife, it's competition, you're upset. You feel like you've been taken for a ride. You've been deceived. You've been tricked. So it's wisdom based on God's truth. That's the wisdom that we want. There's two kinds of wisdom. The wisdom of the world and the wisdom that comes from God. Now in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 verse 8, we see here in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 8, we see that some people have more wisdom than others. Now, there's a lot of gifts. Sometimes you can think, boy, that person has a lot of knowledge. Boy, they just have a knack for remembering and knowing a lot of things. Well, that's fine. Well, this person has a lot of compassion. They just seem to have that naturally. Well, this individual has a lot of faith. They just seem to be trusting in God so effortlessly. Well, for one is to given the Spirit the word of wisdom. This person just seems to have a lot of wisdom. They seem to make good decisions. They're somebody to go to for good advice. Go to her. She's got good advice, good solid advice. To another, the word of knowledge by the same Spirit. So some people have more than others. That's true. That's why James 1 and verse 5, it says, if any of you lack wisdom, you're making dumb moves over and over, bad choices, bad decisions, things are never working out. You look back, why did I do that? Well, we all do that now and then. But you consistently look, why did I do that? That wasn't very wise. That was dumb. Well, I should have known better. Or maybe even others say, don't do that. Or why didn't you ask me? Well, if any lack wisdom, let him ask of God. God, I don't do very well in this area. Give me some wisdom. Help me with wisdom. Help me to make decent decisions. Help me with that. Well, it said he will. Let him ask of God that gives to everybody liberally. Well, sure, I'll help you out. That's God's mindset. Oh, sure, I'll help you out if that's what you want. Now, that's based on certain things, and that's what we're covering now as well. So God will give to all men liberally if that's what you feel that you need. You don't have that so naturally, good common sense or good grasp of how do you apply things. Wisdom tells you what to do next, when to do it, when not to do it. So on what is your life based? On what is your life based? We're all going to make thousands of decisions, thousands of judgments, some minor, others are much more important. When we're young, we can make decisions that affect the rest of our life. So they can be very critical. Other important decisions, you know, at other times in life don't come as often. Psalm 111, verse 10. Psalm 111, verse 10. It says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Now you're starting to wise up. The fear of the Lord is where we start. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. There is a God. God created us. God has a plan. There's a purpose for me. There's a way of life. There's a way of God. I'd do better to go that way. I know it'll work. I know God rewards. I know His way pays off in the end. Sometimes it doesn't look like that, but I'll fear God. That's the beginning of wisdom. Now you're starting to wise up. Now you're getting with it. Now you're not going to follow the wisdom of the world, because those are trends and fads and ideas and stupid reasonings, and it looks good, it sounds good, it appeals to your emotions, to what you see and how you feel, and it ends up being stupid and harmful. That's the wisdom of the world. So the fear of the Lord's the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that say, God's way is best. I'll do God's commandments. His praise endures forever. So the best foundation for good choices is God's truth, God's values, God's way of life. So when someone comes to that, they immediately begin to be wiser. Automatically, they're immediately much wiser when they say, I know God's way is best. That's what I want. You're immediately wiser, because you're going to start judging your life based on those values, not what everybody else is doing. So you're already better off. You don't even know a whole lot. You just made that choice. And you learn a lot more and become a lot more wiser, of course. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 7. says, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery. The wisdom of God is a mystery. People don't see it. It's a mystery to the world. How many times the Bible say, well, they'll think you're foolish. Well, that looks like you're being stupid or unwise. Well, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to give up a good job for the Sabbath? Well, why would you want to not do the Christmas here? Well, why wouldn't you want? And it looks rather foolish. Well, look at all you're missing out on. We speak the wisdom of God in a mystery. God's wisdom is something that has to be revealed. We have to be helped with that wisdom. Even the hidden wisdom. Wisdom that's hidden from the world, which God ordained before the world unto our glory. The way of God is a hidden wisdom. It points you in the right path. It's a lamp unto our feet. So when somebody decides, well, I'll go God's way, or I'll be baptized, I'll be converted, or whatever. Well, now you're wising up. Now you're wising up. It just happened automatically, fundamentally that way, because it's the mystery that God reveals that makes us wiser. So what are a few tips then that we can give on wisdom? A few tips along these lines to be more wise would be Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 15, Proverbs 12, 15. The first point is get some counsel. If you want to make a good decision, well, get some input. Get some counsel. What do you think about this? Here's what I'm thinking of doing. Even sometimes you think, oh, yeah, automatically, that'd be good. Get somebody's opinion, their viewpoint, their feedback on it. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he hearkens unto he that hearkens unto counsel is wise. Just be wiser about something. But the way of a fool is always right in his own eyes. It's like one person said, the trouble with good advice is that it usually interferes with your plans. That's the problem with all good advice. It isn't what I want to do. Sometimes we know that and it's what I want to do. And we don't go to get the advice because we know we're going to hear something we don't want to hear. I mean, we all do that. Sometimes we have our mind made on this. What I want, I'm set on it, and I don't need to talk to anybody. So get counsel. Point number two in making good, better decisions is analyze your motive. You know, what's driving this decision anyway? What's at the bottom of it? What am I really thinking? Why am I really deciding? What am I really thinking about? Analyze your motive, your emotions. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 9. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 9, be not hasty in your spirit. In this case, to be angry. For anger rests in the bosom of fools. Don't be hasty in your emotion, your spirit, and be driven that way. Watch your emotions. Analyze. Why am I thinking that? Why am I deciding this? What's driving this decision? Now, maybe it's good and right and necessary. Certainly can be that. But sometimes you stop and think, well, you know, I've had to stop and think, well, why am I deciding this? Why am I doing this? And you step back and, you know, I don't think I need to do that. Well, watch your emotions. Another point is get all the facts. Get the facts before you make that decision. Don't assume more than you should. Remember that account in ancient Israel when they crossed over the Jordan and it was Manasseh and half-tribe Manasseh and Gad, and they decided they wanted their inheritance on the east side of the Jordan. And they said, well, okay, but you come on over with us until we conquer all these people, then you can go on back home. Okay, well, that sounds fair enough. So they did that, and then they went back home and went back over on the east side of the Jordan. Well, they decided when they went back on the east side of the Jordan, they were going to build this kind of altar or this monument, and they took stones and they set it all up. Well, word got back to the other tribes over on the other side of the Jordan. They're setting up an altar, and they're already worshiping false gods. Well, they get armed, they get all worked up, they all know what's going to happen. We're going to put a stop to this in Israel, and God said no false gods. And they come out and they cross over Jordan, and they're going to slaughter half-tribe Manasseh and Gad, and they're all worked up. They know in their mind what's going on here, all this false worship in an altar. And they were just able at the last minute, they said, well, what are you doing over here? Well, you're setting up altars. And they said, that isn't what we're doing. We wanted to set up a monument so people would remember our God. So they would remember who it was that delivered us, who gave us this land. And they said, oh, well, we didn't realize that. Well, they were ready to slaughter them. They didn't inquire. Say, hey, send somebody over and ask these people what they're doing or any. They were all worked up, headed out, made the decision, not very wise. And finally, at the last second, it was explained to them. And, oh, okay, sorry. So that can happen easily when we do that. I've done that, you know, a time or two in rearing our sons. I remember one or two occasions. I got all worked up. They were home later. They did that. I said, well, you're going to your room, and I told you, and I thought, and you're just trying to get away with this, and you're trying this and that. And well, Dad, the guy, Mr. So-and-so, didn't show up. We had to walk home. Oh. Oh, I see. Well, and I had it all figured out. I knew everything that went on, and that isn't what happened at all. I didn't get the facts. I should have said, you know, what... You know, tell me what's going on. Now, 99% of the time, I was right. Those were rare. Now, remember the account in Luke chapter 2? Jesus didn't go back home with his parents. His parents were worried about him. They looked for him 3 days, found him in the temple. What did Joseph and what did Mary do? What's the first thing they did? You're punished. Get in the car. We're going home. You're grounded. No cell phone, or they didn't, you know. What did Mary do? Son, we've been very worried about you. We've been searching 3 days. What are you doing? Explain to us. Help us to understand what you're thinking first. So then he explained it and made the difference then. Tell me what's going through your head before I punish you. Well, tell me, what are you thinking? We're worried about you. We've been searching for you. Explain to us first, what are you doing? So then he explained, and he was, you know, his attitude, his motive was not deception or devious or rebellious. Well, that made a difference in the judgment. They used good wisdom. Then he decided, well, I need to go back home. Too young, not time for my ministry. I'm going back home. And then everything was fine. Everybody acted responsibly. Used good wisdom, because it wasn't emotion driven. Even though they said were very distraught, but they used their good wisdom, ruled out over the emotions of the moment. What do most of us do often as parents? Well, we get emotional about something and get upset and get angry. So wisdom says get the facts. Another point in using good wisdom, don't ask for a sign from God. Don't ask God for a sign. Be careful about deciding God's will. You're going to get it. You're going to decide you need another car. God, if the salesman comes out when I get there and he says, "Boy, do I have a deal for you," I know that you're telling me that this is the one I ought to get. And when you get to the car dealership, what's he say? "Boy, do I have a deal for you." There's your sign. Don't put God in the spot like that. Don't dictate to God how he's going to guide you or help you by setting up a scenario, and God has to then is duty bound to work through what you've decided for him to do. Don't put him in that set of circumstances. Certainly you can pray and say, "Well, God, show me, lead me, help me to see what I should do." That's fine. That leaves it to him. That doesn't set it up. And sometimes we can set things up for the way we want it. I had one man leave the church one time, and I forget what he said, something about, "I prayed to God, I went to church today, and I asked God to give me a sign whether I should stay in this church or not." He was telling me this after he left. "I asked God for a sign whether I should stay in the church." And so I went up after church. I was helping out to move, and I helped to move the podium, and there was another man there and says, "Oh, no, that's okay, I'll get it." He said, I had what I needed. They don't want me here. Well, no, it was an innocent, "Oh, you don't have to, I'll catch it, I'll get it," or something. I got my sign. It was God telling me, "You're not needed here. They don't want you here." Well, it wasn't God saying anything. He already decided he was leaving. He now needed something to justify it, to feel good about it. So don't make up the mind beforehand. Don't ask God for signs. You can ask God for help, and you can come to a conclusion. "I think God made this possible. I think God presented these circumstances." That's okay. His way, not how you dictated. And then, of course, maybe last, but this would be first in importance, Proverbs 3, verse 5. Proverbs 3 and verse 5. Proverbs 3 and verse 5. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him. He'll direct your paths." So asking God for guidance. "God, give me the guidance. Help me." So it says when we do that, we acknowledge God, he directs our paths. He helps us in decisions and circumstances. Now, we're all going to make mistakes. None of us see perfectly. Nobody has perfect wisdom. We all learn from things that we do, but hopefully not tragic ones or serious ones. Putting these things together that I've mentioned increase our chances that we make better decisions and better judgments. Let's go back and look at a couple verses in wrapping it up here. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18. 1 Corinthians 1:18, "The preaching of the cross is to them that are dying." Well, that's foolish. You believe all this stuff about God and Christ and all of that. It's a bunch of foolishness. And that's more and more in our society. "But unto us that are being saved, it's the power of God. For it's written, I'll destroy the wisdom of the so-called wise. I'll bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent." So where is all the wise of this land, this society? Where's the disputer of the world? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Isn't the world coming to crashing down, coming to an end? No flesh saved alive? "For after that, in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them." The word went out through the apostles. Now the Jews, they're a kind of people that look for some miraculous sign. "Give us a sign. Show us something that awes us. We're amazed by it." Well, that must be of God. Well, the devil can inspire those things. Miraculous things. The false prophet will show some signs. Well, the Greeks seek after wisdom. They like something intellectual and deep and profound and, listen to that. I never heard about that. And all it is intellectual nothingness. But unto them which are called, in verse 24, both Jews and the Greek, Christ, the power of God, the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men. The weakness of God is stronger than men. For you see your calling, how that not many wise after the flesh, not many of the mighty, the know-it-all, the influential, the elite, not that many called. But they sure know how to get ahead in society. They're pretty smart. And not all of them doing evil things by it. They're just talented. But not many of them are called. Not many mighty and noble. God's called those who are the more foolish, the everyday, the average of the world, to confound the wise. So here we are in the kingdom of God, and people, they're resurrected, their jaw drops. He's a spirit being. She's in the kingdom of God. Maybe I don't know so much. Maybe I do need to be taught something. That's what it's for. The base things of the world are things which are despised, has God chosen. The things which are not, to bring to naught things that are. That no flesh would glory. How do we get to the kingdom of God? Well, I was just so smart, I knew everything. Nobody's going to say that. It's the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom that comes from God. But of him are you in Christ Jesus, who of God has made unto us wisdom and righteousness, sanctification and redemption, that according as it is written, he that glories, let him glory in God and God's wisdom. It's wisdom from above. So how do we live our lives? According to what? What drives us? What helps make our decisions? Our own intuition? Our own common sense? Our human thinking? What everybody else is doing? What society's into, the prevailing fads. From where do we get our wisdom? What do you think's the worst decision in all of history? What would have been the worst decision in all of history? I wonder what that would be. Well, I don't know that I know that. I don't know that the Bible says, but says specifically. But how about Adam and Eve eating the fruit? Bad career choice. They reasoned, I think the thing looks good. We're hungry. I want to be wise. I want to be like God, and I want it now. Go ahead, take it. Okay, I'm taking it. You take a bite too. Very foolish. Was it according to God's wisdom? According to God, what God would have guided them? According to God's commandments? Said, don't do that. What's the result? Of course, the world set on the path that we're still on. So that has to go down as one of the all-time bad ones. What would be maybe another one? How about one from the New Testament? Judas helps the Sanhedrin find where Jesus is for 30 pieces of silver. Good move. Good way to get ahead. 30 pieces of silver, a lot of money. Very foolish. What's he driven by? Probably emotion. Jealousy. Maybe how he was being used, or maybe he didn't think Jesus was acting the way Jesus should, or whatever it was. Very unwise, very foolish move. One of the all-time worst in history. And there's other, of course, other important ones as well. What would be some that are on the horizon? Beast and false prophet decide to fight against Christ at his return. Bad move. Won't work. They're deceiving a bunch of people. All the people are deceived, very unwise. They don't have the hidden wisdom. They're deceived. They're looking for a sign. They're getting their signs and wonders. Very unwise. Well, God's way is the foundation of having sound judgment and wisdom. God's way is the foundation of that. So we don't have that perfectly as of yet, even if we know the truth. So we use sense and good sense and ask for God's help. Departing from God's way is a foolish move. Departing from God's way is foolishness. So we're either going to live by the wisdom that comes from above. We're guided by the wisdom from above. Or from our own brilliant deductions. Which is it going to be? Our own brilliant intuition and decision making. Or we're guided from above. Sound wisdom from God. And that we get help from others, as we mentioned before. Of course, God's way gives that. The holy days give a sound framework for sound judgment, the plan of God, the fundamental laws of God. They guide a person. They put you on a solid foundation, help you use good sense, good wisdom that we don't regret. So obviously wisdom is important. Let's continue to always strive, always focus on, and always strive to have the wisdom that is from above.